This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Across the state, many Michigan schools are struggling to keep pace with national averages, and the U.S. as a whole is struggling to keep pace with other advanced countries. It's a major challenge. So in response, State Superintendent Brian Whiston has announced the Top 10 in 10 Years plan. In other words, Top 10 Education State in the next 10 years. It proposes focusing on teacher quality and research-proven methods to improve Michigan's public education. Joining us now is State Superintendent Whiston. So first, in this 10 and 10 plan, you note education reform takes time. We must implement, use evidence and data to correct course and continue with progress on the key goals. What does that all mean?
Well, I think, you know, what happens if we want to compare ourselves to other states and other countries, first and foremost, we have to have a coherent and cohesive strategy. You know, I think one of the problems in Michigan and many states is we constantly change direction and where we're heading. So I think we engaged in a process where we invited parents, the business community, the education community, think tanks, a wide range of people, and said, if we want to become a top 10 state, how do we go about doing it? And so we created these guiding principles of being a coherent, cohesive strategy, to have a student-directed learning process, to be driven by data and accountability, and to understand that poverty matters. I mean, not so long ago, 10, 15 years ago, Michigan was performing near the top if you compare us to other states, but our poverty numbers grew significantly and we sunk to the bottom. We have to understand poverty not as an excuse, but that we have to do some things differently in our classrooms if we're going to reach students of poverty. And we have to break, you know, the cycle of illiteracy in families and communities. There's a lot of work to be done, not only in our schools, but in our parent communities if we want to become a top 10 performing state.
I want to talk about several of those points that you made. Let's start with, you know, teacher quality is a concern. Why do you think teacher quality is one of the major problems today?
If you were a teacher 25 years ago, students, I think, acted and behaved and had backgrounds as such that you could teach a certain way. And today, I think we're in a new world. Kids are much more attuned to technology and need to be taught in a different way. Education, you know, kids go through to become teachers, they become teachers, and then they do that for 30, 40 years. We have a teaching cycle that needs to learn and adapt to the new students and how new students are learning. And so we need to make some changes on how we prepare our teachers, and we need to make changes on how we do professional development. Too many districts do district-wide PD because it's cheaper, and what we need to do is individual-based professional development for teachers. And we need to do that in a way just like students, on an individual basis. You know, if all of us are, four of us are math teachers, we all might need different help in what we teach. Maybe I'm struggling in fractions, you're struggling in something else. We should have individualized professional development to help us based on our evaluation as teachers. We need to prepare teachers differently, and we need to have professional development for current teachers to help them be successful.
You touched on this. You noted that in the report that poverty matters, not to be used as an excuse, but as a purpose to design the Michigan system of education that motivates and excites all children about learning, keeps them in school, provides them with hope and knowledge for a successful future. So poverty certainly is a problem in education. I'm not sure how you design a system that overcomes poor kids in poorly funded school districts and give them a successful future. So give me some hard examples of how that works.
So what we did in Dearborn, where we had, you know, 72% free and reduced lunch, some 90 in some of our schools as high as 90%, and some schools as high as 90% English language learners. And we were able to, through a student-driven process, engage the students in setting personal and academic goals, and then working with parents to help them understand those goals. So, for example, if a kid's in fourth grade and they're reading at the second grade level, they knew where they were reading, and we created charts and parent contracts to help them get up to grade level. And those contracts talked about what the parents or guardians needed to do, talked about what we were going to do, and we provided additional instruction either before or after school or during summer to help students reach these goals. And when students take ownership of their learning, they understand where they're performing, they understand where they should be, it helps them go a long way towards addressing and solving those problems. And that didn't cost us any more money to do that. Not to say that we don't need to invest in education, because we do, but the answer isn't always money. Sometimes it's just understanding where the students are performing and develop an individual plan for that student to be successful.
Well, sometimes it is money, and I want to talk about Detroit Public Schools because they're about to go broke. They have a number of challenges. Property tax declines, schools are closing, parents choose privately run charter schools or neighboring districts. There are now fewer students and less money for Detroit schools. It's just this constant downward spiral. How can the state improve urban schools in that cycle?
I think that's a very good challenge that's facing us, not only in Detroit, but a lot of our urban centers. And what we do need to do is create this student-driven education process that engages the parents and guardians. And in Detroit particularly, we have to break the cycle of illiteracy. We have to show students that there are opportunities to be successful. Let's get students into preschool. Let's have them design their education plan K through 12. Let's let them graduate with college credit or a certificate that maybe that they've earned towards becoming an electrician or a plumber, whatever it is that excites them and that they want to do in a career. We need to design a plan that makes that happen. And we also need wraparound services. We need the Department of Mental Health and Human Services, now called something else, but those in schools as well. And we need to work with the community partners to make sure students are getting the services, mental health, health, food, nutrition that they need so that they can be successful. It can't be done by schools alone.
That sounds great, but I mean, we can't even get a nurse in a school these days. How do you manage all of that? And all the agencies are stretched thin.
Yeah, we have to get nurses in our schools. We just have to invest in education to make it happen. That is where it is going to cost money. We have to have that so that students, you know, behavior needs, nutrition needs, so that their family needs are addressed. And so we need nurses and social workers in our schools as part of the education plan to help them be successful. So it's kind of a one-stop shop where parents can come into the school and get the services they need and keep the kids in school while they're getting those services.
Your top strategic goal is, and I'll quote this, provide every child access to an aligned, high-quality P-20 system from early childhood to post-secondary attainment through a multi-stakeholder collaboration with business and industry, labor and higher education to maximize lifetime learning and success. What does a multi-stakeholder collaboration with business and industry, labor and higher education look like?
For example, if I want to go to school to become a doctor, we need to have programs with the local physicians and hospitals so that students are taking classes in high school and college and they're getting a work experience in the medical field. So that's one example. Another example is if I want to become an electrician, then the schools need to set up a system where kids are taking high school classes, college classes, and getting work experience in the field of electrician so that they can decide if that's where they want to go into or not. So it's creating these business and college and school partnerships so that students are getting an opportunity to experience all three while they're in high school.
Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan has suggested something similar to that, using city workers as a way to train kids who might want to be firefighters or something like that. Is that
Absolutely.
What you're talking about? Okay.
Absolutely.
You know, we've been talking about money and how, you know, there's a steady drumbeat that money won't fix Michigan schools. But at the same time, you've just acknowledged that we're going to have to spend money somehow in some ways to make the schools in Michigan better and more competitive and in that top 10 bracket you're talking about. So how much money does matter to a successful education?
Well, that's the tough conversation we need to have, because with some students, we're getting more than enough money for them. But other students who are coming from poverty backgrounds or English language learner backgrounds or have special needs cost more money. And that's an additional spot where we need to invest money. So this notion that every child, as an example, needs $8,000, I want to challenge that thinking. Some students, it may only cost us $6,000, $7,000 to educate, but others may take us, you know, 9 or 10. So we have to stop funding education on a per pupil basis and start funding it on an individual basis and allow districts to have the programs to meet the needs of all kids. We do have to look at funding schools in a different way.
I'm not sure how that would be. I mean, on average, students in wealthier districts tend to perform better. They get more money from the local real estate taxes in addition to the money they get from the state as their share. If those kids are doing better and there's more money being pumped into their schools, why wouldn't that translate to a Detroit or a Flint or Benton Harbor?
Well, certainly money does matter. Anyone who says it doesn't, I'll take their money and we'll see if it matters to them, right? Certainly money matters. And success in a lot of our school districts where they are higher funded has something to do with the funding. It has something to do with the education they're receiving. But it also is their background, their word usage, how much experience they get in their daily lives. I mean, remember, education, we only have the kids 12% of the calendar year. The families and the communities have them the rest of the time. So that's why we need to create rich partnerships with the community and with parents, with business and with higher education to give students those opportunities to be successful. So I don't want to say that, you know, absolutely giving every kid, you know, $11,000 will reach success, because I still argue there are some kids who don't need that amount of funding to be successful and others may need that or more.
Tell us where we can see the Top 10 in 10 plan.
You can go to the Michigan Department of Education website and michigan.gov and go to the Department of Education and people can download the plan from there.
Brian Whiston is the State Superintendent of Michigan Schools. Thanks for talking with us.
Appreciate the opportunity and have a great day.